are going to be discussing some ancient knowledge tonight, and I hope to show you that in remote antiquity, persons knew much more than what people know now. I hope to show you that the kind of technology that we consider advanced these days is very gross and have a different nature than the technical knowledge of remote antiquity. Bhagavad Gita gives you insight into civilizations that were far more advanced in terms of human powers and qualities than what we have today. Just like on the cover of Bhagavad Gita, you may see horses, chariot, a bowman with arrows. So you would think, oh well, not very militarily advanced. But actually, what's going on? The bowman's arrows could do things like change weather, cause mass hallucinations just by firing an arrow and chanting an appropriate mantra before the arrow was released. So, unless you know that kind of thing, you would just look at this picture and say, oh, horseman, chariot driver, archer, can compare to the great war technology we have today. But those who know about the ancient Vedic civilization, you understand what's going on. Even the archer could fire an arrow that would cause a localized nuclear explosion. In other words, a nuclear blast wouldn't just annihilate haphazardly everyone and everything. No. The nuclear blast would be localized just against one person. You might say, well, why even a localized nuclear blast that would just take out one person? Well, that's how powerful the warriors were then, that some of them were so extraordinary that only a individualized nuclear blast would take them out. So, by sound vibration, by mantra, all these potencies were manifested. A different type of civilization based on more subtle powers, far more subtle than what people know about in terms of psychic powers today. These days, if someone can bend a spoon with his mind, everyone's amazed. Just like one famous spoon bender, Yuri Geller. He works for multinational petroleum and natural gas companies that use his psychic abilities to find out where the oil is and where the natural gas is. Bhagavad Gita is concerned with much more subtle abilities. In fact, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, you'll find that the whole scene is being relayed and a play-by-play account is given of the action by someone who's not physically present. The secretary named Sanjay, he's located away from the battlefield, yet he's able to give a complete, accurate play-by-play account of what's happening. Because he had that kind of power, that even though he wasn't physically present in a place, he could see it and describe what was going on. Now you may consider that, oh, this sounds very far-fetched, until you understand that it's public knowledge now. It's nothing hidden. It's public knowledge that the CIA spent a few million dollars getting psychics to do this in the USA. From some vantage point in the USA, they would get these psychics during the Cold War to see into what's going on in missile silos in the former USSR. They spent a few million dollars cultivating this program. But in Bhagavad Gita, it's just described as a matter of fact. The secretary to a king, Sanjay, was not on the battlefield, yet he's calmly and coolly telling everything that's happening. Not only does Bhagavad Gita present knowledge of a technologically advanced society beyond what we know today, but Bhagavad Gita also presents knowledge of realms beyond material realms. First, we have to be educated enough to accept the reality that there are other living dimensions and other planets for life than Earth. It's quite hilarious that so many human beings think that this little insignificant planet is the only one that harbors life, and everywhere else the universe is vacant. Bhagavad Gita will never accept that point of view. In fact, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that everywhere in the cosmos you'll find living entities. Everywhere. The living entities can adapt to any environment. So why should we think only the Earth has life? The other parts of the universe don't support life? No. Life can adapt to any condition. So Bhagavad Gita accepts that as just ordinary knowledge. No big deal. Bhagavad Gita will teach us that when we look at the cosmos, we should see varieties of stations, living places, from very bad to very good. Still, whether the living situation you get is very hellish or very heavenly or in between, you can't stay there. The worst, the best, and that which is in between is all temporary. And because there is this temporariness, you can't have full-blown enjoyment. Because you know in the back of your mind there's going to be an end. Full-blown enjoyment means you never even consider that there could be an impediment. Now, how many of you had that kind of enjoyment in your material life? Like, what you're doing is so fantastic. You could never even think that there would be an impediment. No, you don't have those kind of situations in ordinary life. All our situations are limited and susceptible to impediment and barrier. You can think of any situation in which you thought you were so happy, and you can see that there's a limitation on that situation. The intelligent person wants to situate himself or herself beyond the clutches of this temporary universe. The intelligent person sees his or her life as an opportunity for conquering over time. That is a very wonderful occupation. To mold your life so that you get free from past, present, and future. So Bhagavad Gita deals with that also. First, I'll read the invocation to Bhagavad Gita. We can turn to page 1. I'll just read, and don't worry if you don't know what the Sanskrit means. Just the sound vibration is purifying. Om Jnana Chimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagajat Sahagana Radhana Tanvitam Tamsajivam Sadhuitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Sapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishwabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakopatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, let's please turn to page 432. We're going to hear from Krishna about the planetary system in the universe. You'll find out much more about what's going on in the universe than you will learn from any probe sent to Mars or whatever. Why are we listening to Krishna explain about the cosmos? We're listening to Krishna because Krishna is the highest authority. Now, what does it take to be the highest authority? Krishna is accepted as the highest authority because everything is his energy. Everything can be traced back to Krishna. He's the origin of everything. So if everything is your energy and everything emanates from you, then you are the highest authority. But who can say that everything emanates from them? Who can say that everything is our energy? Only Krishna can say that. In other words, we're not listening to Krishna just dogmatically. No. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to get us to see that there are persons of different levels of power. The powers of human beings are comparatively very small. Let's just consider what goes on here on the Earth planet. People live a short time. maybe the 70s. People don't understand very much about what to do with their own life and the universe. There's so much they don't know. But Bhagavad Gita will explain to you that there are other planets which have a quality of life far beyond what we know about, even though they're material. It shouldn't bewilder you to accept that there could be various regions and realms and planets with a standard of living and sensory happiness far beyond what persons who are just aware of their little town or city might be aware. Let's take, for example, here's Manchester. Those who grow up in Manchester, you're used to lots of rain, cloudy sky. But if you hear someone talk about Hawaii or the Gold Coast of Australia, then it's like, oh, I can't believe it. The sun's always shining. How can anybody live like that with the sun always shining? Actually, the sun shines so bright in Australia that it's a big anxiety. It's the skin cancer capital of the world. One Australian scientist came out with a bold pronouncement. He said, look, let's see the way nature does things. So there's no way that a people whose bodies are meant for 20 minutes of sunshine a day in England can adapt to a country like Australia, which has minimum 8 hours of bright sunshine a day. It's just, the science is pointing out it's not going to work. It's not nature's system. But, you know, the British, they went to Australia. First they sent their convicts there, and then they came. And so after they wiped out almost all the Aboriginals, that left Australia to be populated by basically persons of British stock. So the scientist is pointing out, what's the weakness of that British stock in Australia? The British stock is accustomed to just a few minutes of sunshine a day at most. Now you take the same bodies and put those bodies in a place which gets 8 hours of intense sunshine a day, especially with the hole in the ozone. It's not going to work. So the scientists said there's only one solution possible for the future survival of the Australians. Said they have to all intermarry with Aboriginals and get some melanin in this, otherwise they're not going to survive. Of course, the most mainstream Australians would rather die of skin cancer than to risk such a fate intermarrying with Aboriginals. So here you have an example, even on this very planet, of exotic living situations. It's like here in Manchester, it's known for almost perpetual cloudy skies and rain. Maybe somebody who's grown up here all their life would have a hard time accepting that there could be a place like Hawaii or the Gold Coast of Australia. That shows you that there are different varieties of living circumstances. Why is it you're born here in the UK and you're not born in North Korea, where they just had a famine so intense that some people were eating their own children. Food was that short. Why weren't you born there? I'm sure some of you wonder about that from time to time. Why was I born in my circumstances and not in another circumstance? How many of you have fought like that before? What's going on? What's the arrangement by which I took birth in Manchester and someone else takes birth in Chechnya or something like that? A place where it's just perpetual violence, perpetual war. I was just reading how in Mexico, right near the U.S. border, they have huge cities which are under the grip of, what do you call them? Organized crime for maintaining the sex slave industry. So mothers were talking that you don't know if your daughter, your little girl daughter, is going to be coming back home from school or from playing in the street because the organized crime rings are just scouring the streets for young girls to kidnap and put them into sexual slavery, slip them across the border to the USA. And so many young girls in the city go missing because the police are all paid off by these sex slavery gangs. Just think, why weren't you born in those kind of circumstances? And the parents are just powerless. They're just like, what can we do? I know so many daughters on this block who are missing. And then the parent would just rattle off like six names on one street. So, why aren't you born in these circumstances? Why are you here? We should think about that. Is it by chance? Or is this some principle of design? What did we do in our past life that we didn't take birth in those circumstances? That we should ask ourselves. Now, according to the Vedic viewpoint, the planet Earth is in the middle planetary system. There's the upper, the lower, and the middle planetary system. The upper planetary system has much better facilities for sense enjoyment and longevity than the middle planetary system. The middle planetary system is mixed happiness and distress. The upper planetary system is all material happiness, and the lower planetary system is all material distress. So, both situations of either too much distress or too much happiness make it very difficult to concentrate on what is the actual goal of life. People are always distressed. Generally, they just can't lift their noses up and see the bigger picture. They're so caught up in just the necessities of their tiny little situation, trying to survive, trying to protect themselves from yet another painful attack. Then you would think that, okay, it's very difficult for someone who's always in distress to think of something else. What about those who don't feel that they're so much in distress? That means the residents of the heavenly planets. When there's very little material distress and ample promise of material enjoyment, that's also a bit difficult because you'll never get serious about your spiritual life because there's the abundance of material sense pleasure all around. The Bhagavad Gita aims at a much more thoughtful spectrum of society. Bhagavad Gita is for those who are tired of material happiness and material distress. You see, both material happiness and distress are a disturbance. They're an agitation. Somehow or other we have to use our life energies, our careers, in order to come in contact with the most beneficial lifestyle for ourselves, for others, for our environment. Let's listen to what Krishna says about what's going on in the universe. Mm-hmm. All right, we're turning to page 432, text 16. Abhrama bhuvana loka puna avitino arjuna mamupajat konteya puna janma navijate. Abhrama bhuvana loka puna avitino arjuna mamupajat konteya puna janma navijyate. Would you like to read the translation, Petra?
From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all the pleasures of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again.
Yes, so here Lord Krishna is giving us a geography lesson. That no matter where you go in the material world, there's going to be problems. Whether you're on the highest, most heavenly planets, the super Hawaii type planets, or you're in the very distressed and hellish type planets. North Korea, Ethiopia. Krishna is warning us that don't seek your shelter anywhere in this material world. Whether you're concerned about the distress planets or the happiness planets or in between, the point is that if we listen to Krishna, we'll actually get a realistic vision of what should be going on. Krishna wants to save you the trouble of figuring everything out yourself. So he's speaking here. What's the way it's like in this world? From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. In other words, nowhere in this temporary world is our real home. We need to be situated beyond both the lower, the middle, and the upper planetary systems. We're not interested in simply different varieties of happiness and distress and mistaking that as pleasure. An intelligent person thinking, how can the human propensity for pleasure function properly? All right, we'll read some of the purport, page 432. The purport contains, in this case, some technical information about different planets. We'll start reading, page 432. All kinds of yogis, karma, jnana, hatha, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness. Before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. means that we have to qualify ourselves. So in this way, we can go to the correct destination for rendering service to Krishna. Krishna doesn't want to leave his relatives who he doesn't want to leave those on the earth planet, in the sense everyone is Krishna's relative because everyone is part of Krishna. He doesn't want them to be left in ignorance. So he's giving this knowledge of what's going on throughout the cosmos, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest. All our places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. In the purport, we get the technical information that there are different kinds of yogis. Some yogis are into performing good karma. Other yogis are into jnana, metaphysical knowledge. Other yogis are into hatha yoga in terms of its more mystical forms. But unless all these types of yogis attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness, they actually can't attain the supreme destination. So Krishna's point here is that just like there are small destinations, there are also big destinations. And Lord Krishna is recommending, don't try for low pleasure, that will take you to the lowest planets, but also don't try for the highest material pleasure, which will take you to birth on the highest material planets. Because everywhere in this world, there are some basic problems. We should learn how to avoid those problems. If we can help, help. Otherwise, we have an obligation to at least take care of ourselves and set an example for others. How they can take care of themselves. You see, the point is, even if you want to stay on these temporary planets, you can't do that. Everything has an end. Therefore, the intelligent person wants to find out how to get beyond the entire material cosmos and how to learn the skills for existing in that highest realm. I wonder how many of you have thought about the need to map out your life and where it's going. Like if I said to you, where your next life, where are you going? What would you say?
Where would I want to go?
No, where do you think you're going?
The finish line.
Yeah.
I don't know, I tend not to think like that because I know how much things can change so quickly. But I tend not to think too far ahead, vaguely or not.
You don't plan more than a year ahead?
No, not even.
6 months?
It depends, not even in the next hour or two. To a degree. I mean,
so you'll just let whatever happens, happens? Huh?
I guess so.
Because Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that according to your consciousness, at the time of death, you are directed to another body. Implicit in that understanding is that why not get the best type of body? The the best type of body is immune to changes like birth, death, old age, disease. We should think what my next destination will be like. And how can I avoid getting a temporary body? Anyone else thought a bit about what your destination will be? Did you used to think about that, Sarah? What kind of thoughts did you come up with?
Not very
nice ones. No, but what? You should sit in your flat and just kind of think, I wonder what I'm going to be in my next life.
No, I didn't think much about reincarnation.
Mm. Why not?
It was quite a foreign concept to me until a couple of years ago.
Why would so-called reincarnation be a foreign concept? Even in your present existence, you've reincarnated at least three times. Are you about 24 or 25? So, as everyone knows, scientists will tell you that approximately every 7 years, all the cells in your body change. It means you've got a completely different body. Like, where's your baby body? Have you ever seen baby pictures of yourself?
Yeah.
Do you look like that baby?
No.
I mean, your body changed. You see? What we call growth of the body means actually the body's changing. So you know, you can look at a baby picture of yourself and wonder, who is that? Anyone else? Think. Yeah?
I think so many times. What is my next life going before? Before I going to deep into the Hare Krishna.
Mm.
Because in a way Hinduism say that our soul goes into a different body as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go in a different body.
Mm.
You know, and that always scares me.
Yes, the intelligent person doesn't want to take another material body. Because material bodies mean that there are built-in limitations and problems.
Yeah.
When you're old, you're just knocked over by old age and physical deterioration. Everyone knows that. But when you're young, you're also knocked over by what? Who knows? What knocks you over when you're young?
Foolishness.
Foolishness based on what?
You don't have as much knowledge, you're not aware of anything, what can you know, what's set up, and
things. But still, there's something that knocks you over when you're a teenager. What is it? That's a mild way of putting it. Self-discovery of what?
Everything.
Especially? Yes, you're as a youth, you're knocked over by the blazing hot wind of sex desire. It just pushes you, forces you, almost. Can't get away from it. That means suffering. You didn't ask for it. But then all of a sudden you felt these impulses and you had to complicate your life. When you were a little kid, you were carefree. And then as soon as you turned 12, something takes over you.
I don't think it's from far out. big deal and on your back. It's not like
mm-hmm.
everyday. I don't think it's things like that that push back. What about like everyday things like bills and worrying about money and stuff like that? That pulls you back.
You don't like it because it's forced on you, right?
Yeah.
But similarly, just like the bills in the post, they just come. You know? You own property, you got to pay rates, or maybe your landlord wants to offload his rates on you, and you know. So these bills just come. Similarly, old age comes. The sex desire of youth just comes at you. You didn't ask for it, particularly, but you're getting it. So this is oppression. You're oppressed in your old age and you're oppressed in your youth. Isn't that suffering? How many of you, when you were like 8 or 9 years old, were saying to all your friends, I just can't wait till I'm 12 or 13 and I feel what the teenagers feel? Any of you are like that? But as soon as you turn 12, and sometimes even a bit earlier now, you're just hit with all these biological feelings and needs. They're forced upon you. You don't ask for it. How many of you remember when you were 8 or 9 years old? Did you beg material nature? Give me sex desire. Anyone do that here when they're 8 or 9 years old? It was forced upon you. That's suffering. You had no choice. Now you may say, well, even though it's forced upon us, I mean, you know, it's not bad for you. There have been some good times. Even if you have that attitude, still, the point is, the situation is very temporary and limited. Anyone else thought about what your next destination might be?
I wonder what happens after this.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what happens after this. You know, if your physical body, if this one dies, mm-hmm. which is what happens.
Does anybody know?
Yeah.
Where are you going to take your information from? Who are your authorities for getting knowledge from?
But you can't believe anything, it's not for certain. If it's like you can say, you don't know what another country's like, and you can hear people say, well, it's like this, it's like that, but you can experience that.
Yes, yes, that experience is there. You can read about that in Bhagavad Gita and the texts that accompany Bhagavad Gita, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. You can read about just that. You didn't know that?
Yeah, I'm just not convinced. I think it's different than a physical person sat there and saying it's this, or you can go and experience that yourself, but to read something, you can imagine it, but you're not experiencing it, or you've not met somebody as such, and you've experienced it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you.
Maybe you.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe you.
Mm.
What'd you say?
Mm.
I don't think so.
Mm. Possibility, but you never know. Nothing like that, so that's easy.
You're certain about that?
You're
sure?
Sure.
You don't know. We can't say it this way or that way without anything because we're so tiny and limited. That's my point. But if you take your knowledge from Krishna, then you can say what's going on. But you have to understand Krishna's qualifications. Otherwise you'll think I'm just being partisan or sectarian. Why do you say Krishna, Krishna? Why do you say Krishna knows? Do you ever wonder like that?
I just want to wonder about religion and stuff like that, but I don't know, I just find it upsetting, I think. Most people are concerned about in their everyday lives and their everyday problems.
And what will your next birth be?
Yeah, I wonder what happens after that, and it's good, to be honest. So, yeah, I do wonder, I've got nothing you can do about it, for you. Just live a good life, treat people how you wish to be treated.
What's a good life?
To be happy. To do everything that you wish to do. Don't ever regret anything, because you're not going to change it. Treat people respectfully and think of others.
What's the standard for treating people respectfully?
Not to be rude, to be thoughtful and kind, and to think of people.
Suppose I saw you crossing the street without looking, and a speeding car was heading down an old road. And suppose I yell at you. What's your name for that?
Jill.
Jill! What the hell are you doing? I yelled at you so markedly that you practically jumped. And as you jumped, you looked and you saw the car coming and you ran out of the way. So would I have been being good to you?
Yeah.
Why? I'm yelling, screaming.
Yeah, but it means to an end, you would have stopped from being run over.
Okay. So similarly, in Krishna consciousness, we want to stop everyone from being run over by the wheel of time. Anyone else thought about what will your next destination be, your next birth, what it's going to be like?
I never thought about my next birth.
You never thought? You just thought?
I thought about previous births, but never actually thought about the next birth.
That's interesting. Now, why would you think about previous births but not the next one?
Something to do with what you were talking about before, the self-conscious you're born into, if you ever think about previous births.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, just things I would remember. I'm not saying that I don't actually know that there were no previous births, because I don't trust my knowing. But the experience has told me that maybe I've been around before, different circumstances, many, many different circumstances.
Yeah. So in short, what does it seem your future would be, in short? So if someone came up to you and said, how pleasure you, by the way?
Steve.
What's it going to be, Steve? What's your next work going to be? And say, hey, I don't know. What would you say?
What would I say?
Yeah.
Free from any pain or suffering, actually.
How do you know?
That's what I'd want. I don't know if it's going to be that. You know,
but they're not asking what you want, they're asking what's it going to be.
What's it going to be? What do I think it will be?
No.
I want something different.
You want something different. Will you? Does that mean you have to get something different?
I mean, I might not do, but I'm not going to know. But it's a possibility that I'm not going to know, that I'm not going to know what it's going to be. So, enjoy it.
Reminds me of a story. There was a man. Rich man, and he had a wife, and he was very attached to his wife, but she died suddenly, left him brokenhearted. He had amassed a fortune through methods that were all not above board. Anyway, it was time for him to die. His wife had already died. so attached to her. So he meets the demigod, the deva, in charge of death, it's Yamaraj. And Yamaraj explains to him that he did quite a few horribly sinful activities. You're not going to get a human birth again. In fact, I hereby award you the body of a cockroach. But because you did a little bit of good in your life, you can choose a location where you're going to be a cockroach. So the man, can we have some air here? Is this possible? So the man said, well, like what? What do you mean? Choose a location. So the demigod in charge of death said, look, you were so attached to your wife, you're going to go where she goes. But you can't go as a human being because you don't have the good karma to be human again. That's why you're getting a cockroach body. So, where do you want to be as a cockroach? Do you want to be in the same house as your former wife before you both die? And he says, oh, yes, yes, that would be really nice. Put me in the, oh, yeah, I don't mind. I'll be a cockroach. I'll be in the same house as her. So then, the demigod in charge of death said, well, where exactly in the house? Do you want to be a cockroach in the living room? The man replied, no, no, no. That's not close enough. All right. The demigod in Gamera said, well, do you want to be in the dining area? You can be a cockroach in the dining area. And your wife, and her human body is taking dinner, you can be there as a cockroach. Evidently the wife had enough good karma to get a human body again. So now the man said, dining room not close enough. So then Yamaraj said, what about the bedroom? Do you want to be a cockroach in her bedroom? And the man thought about it. Nope, not close enough. Yamaraj, the demigod in charge of death, was getting a little puzzle like, what do you mean, not close enough, not close enough? What about the bathroom? Do you want to be a cockroach right around the commode? Man thought about it. No, still not close enough. What about by the sink? Almost, almost, but not quite close enough. Mm-hmm. What about in the basin? It's getting closer, getting closer. What about in the drain pipe coming from the sink? Yes, yes, close enough, close enough. So, the demigod, the deva in charge of death, wait a minute, can you finally explain this? Why the drain pipe, of all places, that's where you're going to live as a cockroach, and you say that is close enough. See, yes, all those other places, the living room, the dining room, the bedroom, by the commode, were not close enough to be near. But, if I'm a cockroach in the drain pipe coming down from the wash basin, what will happen is every morning, she'll rinse her mouth out and spit, and it'll come down the drain. Oh. That's close enough. Like this. Did I give you a shocker? Ha, 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 ha The point is, we do get reactions to our actions, and we may have our attachments. We may think I'm a nice person, but nature will respond to what we've done in this life according to laws of nature, not according to our sentiment. So we have to find out what those laws of nature are. There's two things, desire and karma. So the man desired to always be with his wife, but he didn't have the good enough karma to do it as a human being. So he got to take birth as a cockroach somewhere in her house. So you can see the power of desire at play here. And also you see the law of karma. Every action has a reaction. He accumulated bad karma while he was living, so he had to get bad reactions. So he tried to make the best use of it. Okay, I'm getting the reaction of a cockroach's body. I'm losing my hemoformal life. At least let me be a cockroach where I can be close to my former life. This gives you accurate insight into how nature works, even though it's just an allegorical story. If we are having some idea that there is a next birth, we must find out everything necessary in order to properly set ourselves up for the next birth. Otherwise, what's the use, you know, of trying to enjoy so many things now for a few short years and then having to pay the price of your whole next lifetime full of reactions against what you did in this lifetime? Think about it. Who else? What would you say? What have you thought about what your next life could be? Or? Mm-hmm. No, you have.
I'm not coming back.
You're not?
I'm not coming back for another one, another life.
How do you manage that?
I just go on. I can't understand the upper and lower levels. I've kind of been in the middle level. It just doesn't appeal to me coming back. And if I can do anything to prevent from coming back, then I'm quite willing to do it.
Okay. And where do you want to go if you don't want to come back? Where do you want to go forward?
I don't know. It is to break the cycle of life, ultimately.
Okay, and then what?
That's it, to break that cycle of life, and then that's what I'm not too sure on.
Ah.
What happens next?
So you're like attracted to the concept of nirvana?
Beyond nirvana, actually.
Okay, well, what is beyond nirvana?
I'm not too sure.
Mm-hmm. We've explained, you remember, right? Are you want to explain? Nirvana is a Sanskrit word. Vana means forest, and nir means out. So, precisely and accurately, nirvana means you're out of the forest of illusion. Okay. Well, where are you then? Now that you're out of the forest of illusion. What's there? It's like if you take the tunnel, you know, when you get to the other side, where are you? You're in France. So, where are you when you're to the other side of repeated birth and death? Well, that's what you have to find out. Otherwise, you won't have that strong motivation necessary to break out of the cycle of repeated birth and death, unless you're inspired by what awaits you on the other side, so to speak.
So
well, do you break out of that cycle?
Mm-hmm.
How do you break out of that cycle?
You actually can only break out if you have something, somewhere better to go. Where would you like to go? If at the time of death you are presented with a choice, you don't have enough good karma to have all of these things, but you can have one. You can either have good looks, money, high education, what's the other one? Or birth in an aristocratic family. Which would you take?
No, I'm not happy with any of those choices. I'm not happy with any of those.
What would you say? Make me ugly, make me poor. Make me illiterate.
Make me poor but happy.
What Krishna is trying to do here is to get you to understand that you have to be very serious about your life and where it's heading. Not just say, oh, I feel like I'm a good person, so I think I'll be alright. Or even, like you're saying, break the cycle of repeated birth and death. Fair enough, but then what? In other words, get out of prison. And then what? What do you do when you're out of prison? Some prisoners, you know, they get so bewildered by the idea of going out of prison and going home that they actually opt to, you know, just keep me in prison. At least I know what's going on here. If we take our information from Krishna, not only will we find out about higher material realms, but we'll also find out about the spiritual realm. You see, just like the matter, your material body is made of matter. Just like anything of matter pertains to the material world, where does the spirit soul pertain to? So, just as there's a homeland for matter and those in matter consciousness, assuming there's a homeland for spirit for those who are in spiritual consciousness. Do you ever think, Paul, about next destination?
The same as Sarah, really, that up until maybe the last 6 months, it wouldn't have entered into my mind. I think it's too short a stage at this stage to think what kind of material stuff I would have in the next life. I'd still be sitting on the fence almost with it. I mean, I'm hoping for the spiritual destination. What?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I'm not at that level yet, so who knows yet?
I thought you were going to say that you want to take birth as a bird that can fly over the stadium where the Man U plays and get a bird's eye view of the whole plane. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going to come back, if I had to come back again, yeah, maybe football in the world would be the choice, would it? But
you could be a pig and they would take your skin and make the football. Could they kick around?
A blade of grass on the pitch.
Yeah, just make a blade of grass underneath. You know.
The goal.
Anyone else think about what their next birth would be? You have to start thinking about that. What happens when you're, you know, a teenager and you show that you, like, not really taking seriously what your various options could be, and your parents get on your case, right? Come on, what are you going to do with yourself? Think about it. And you had that experience before? I remember when I graduated from university, and then my father, he was getting really enthusiastic. And now it's time to enter into the real world. You've had your 4-year university holiday. Now it's time to take up responsibility. He lined up for me all these job interviews at IBM, AT&T. I never would go. I didn't tell him that until 20 years later. He was wondering, you know, I have good connections, and you have, you know, most reputable university degree, and how come you're not being hired? What's happening? He never knew that. He just never showed up. One of his ladies who was doing the connections for him, getting the interviews with these corporations, she found out. I remember she called up and, how could you do this? You know, we had arranged you an opportunity to, you know, be interviewed for General Motors. You didn't even go. How could you do this to someone? You should call up and apologize. Yes. So I remember my father always also telling me, what are you going to do? Finish university. Okay, party's over. Now what are you going to do? He made me go into a department store and buy a suit and tie. I didn't have any suit or tie or anything. Get ready for the interview. And he thought, you know, he's being fatherly. Make sure my son was a responsible man. So we have that propensity to want to secure our future. But why can't we just look a few more years down the track and think, what's my next birth going to be? To hear my father's asking, now think about your career now. How are you going to advance up the corporate ladder? So basically he's asking me, think about the next 10, 20 years. You've got to make the right moves now. Why don't we just increase a little bit? Okay, I was in my early 20s. Let's say if I lived till I'm in my 70s. Think about the next 50 years. He's saying, think about the next 20 or 30 years. Why does he just push it further? Think about the next 50 years. What's your next birth going to be when you give up the present body? As soon as you say like that, everybody just clicks off. What's the use in thinking about that? Be practical. You see how crazy it is? What do you say? As our friend from Swansea, what do you say? Do you ever thought about what your next birth could be? But before that? No, never?
I didn't read any of the college or anything like that. I thought it was just, you had to see it was me that you had to experience it.
Well, what did you think was going to happen to you?
I never thought, to be honest. I always thought when you died. I knew where I was going. I didn't think beyond that. I thought I'd go to university and meet someone and get married and start a family.
Why do all that just to die and that's the end?
I thought life was just about experiencing stuff until somehow, someday, you just walk in front of the car or you... I don't know. I just didn't think like that until...
Why not? Why didn't you think?
I suppose because I was conditioned just to concentrate on the here and now, and I was just taught from a very early age to...
Taught by who?
Parents, school, teachers, all the elders from that always, you know, encouraging me to educate myself, but never anything, like, I come from a family of quite scientific people, so...
Yes, so we're talking science now.
I didn't believe science and religion was a science until I started going to lectures, until people started talking some sense to me.
Well, you heard Sarah just say that when she looks at her baby pictures, she doesn't look like the same person to her. That means her body has changed. So you're already seeing that happening in this life.
I was so concerned with sensing from it as you are with me.
Why?
Desperate. It's a desperate search to be happiness, but I want to approach the next column with the next something to prepare, something to be different from
me. Yes, that's our tendency, to always be looking for the next pleasure. But why can't you just extend that a few more years and think, what will be the pleasure in my next birth? Just a few more years, push it back, you know, push it ahead a bit. Why? Why can't you do that?
It's a bit difficult to get your head down, but, it was still settled to experience it.
The best way to experience is through the ear, to learn by hearing. Suppose I said to you, I don't believe Swansea exists. What would you say? So Krishna is saying the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. You haven't been there. So what can you say? And you would say to me, but if I would follow your instructions, you'd show me where Swansea is. Right? So Krishna is saying the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. If you follow his instructions, he'll show you what's going on from the highest to the lowest material planes of this universe. He'll show you what's going on beyond this material cosmos. Isn't that fair enough? Yes, Krishna's giving you the directions already. Have you? Have you ever thought about what your next birth might be?
Nah, just thought you. It's like before you was born, you can't remember a thing, and just that's it. That was.
Does it have to be that way?
Like it not to be.
So I hope you see now the necessity for having these discussions. Get you all to start thinking in the best possible way. What is your future pleasure? What kind of existence are you going to have in the future? So then, obviously what Krishna is saying in this verse is not so far-fetched, right? Who finds it far-fetched here? Raise your hand. Come on. No one. What is Krishna saying? Ah, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaha Rajuna Juna Mamu Pecha Tukonteya Punaha Janma Nivedite. from the highest planet in the universe down to the lowest. All our places of misery. But you can go other places, the Krishna is saying. But one who attains to my abode of Son of Kunti never takes birth again. All right. I think we'll call it quits there. I hope some of you will take to reading Bhagavad Gita in this life. In this way, things will be successful. All right.
I'm just
going to show you
what you think
we are
going to come
back
with
children. It's like, you
know.
Would you believe me if I told you? How would it help you?
I'm just kidding.
Well, let's put it this way. There's a way to take birth and not to take birth at the same time. That is, if you appear in this world simply for the benefit of others. You were gone.
Spending the lecture tomorrow. She's spending her lecture tomorrow morning. She's skipping class tomorrow.
Yeah. That's bad. I called and asked. They told me, oh, she's going in the afternoon. Stick around. Alright. We'll talk more tomorrow. You'll be here all day tomorrow? You're a free girl? Born free? Yeah, we'll have a good chat. Talk all about life, love, happiness. All the crucial subjects.